welcome to the GlobalPDX podcast. As our second season of the podcast comes to a close, we are gearing up for our fall conference and look forward to providing content and connection to Oregon's hub of global changemakers. My name is Andrea Johnson. I'm the chair of the GlobalPDX Advisory Board and the executive director of Green Empowerment. In today's Speaking Change podcast, I'm joined by Mike Shanley. Mike is the CEO of Aid Connect Data, a software that simplifies the USAID procurement process from identifying opportunities and partners to proposal development research. Mike got his start in international development as a Peace Corps volunteer in Ukraine and then worked at Chemonix International before founding Connected International in 2013 and Aid Connect Data. Mike, thank you so much for joining me today.
Andrea, thank you so much. I'm very excited to be here and to share our expertise with your network and members.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting in preparation for this. We don't think we've actually had one focused on fundraising or funding. And it definitely is a topic that I know myself and a lot of our members are interested in, specifically around government kind of opportunities in USAID. So maybe you could start by just telling us a little bit more about yourself in terms of what motivated you to start Aid Connect and also share a little bit more about the services you offer.
Yeah, absolutely. So after Peace Corps, I worked in Washington, D.C. at Chemonix International. They're the largest USAID contracting firm or were at the time. And there I learned both the process of how organizations win and manage USAID funding, but also I saw how organizations are successful in getting into the market and those that aren't. And why this is important is because it is a very large amount of funding. It's over $20 billion a year now that USAID is giving out in grants and contracts around the world. So what I saw there is how organizations prepare for their engagement with the USAID market, things that they can do to make it more likely to get funding, and then also what types of partners are the best fit for the USAID market, which isn't the fit for everyone. And one thing that I'm, you know, always great to hear is, at least when I talk to new organizations or do a seminar, is letting them know, here's how USAID funding works. And afterwards, often it's, okay, I understand that's not the right fit for my organization this time. That can save that organization time so they can pivot and look at other funding resources. But yes, it's not always the most exciting topic that gets you the headlining keynote speech, but it is the cornerstone behind any organization, whether it's a for-profit consultancy or a nonprofit or a university or whatever the entity is.
So can you talk a little bit more about how you support organizations? Like, what's your approach in terms of those services?
Yeah. So what we've developed is the three P's to being successful with USAID: past performance, procurements, and partners. So the first thing with USAID is, I like to say they're the opposite of a venture capital or a private equity firm. Private equity firm is going to give you funding for something you haven't done. Here's money. I hope you 10x or 100x or become exponentially larger over the next few years. I trust you're the right people to do that. USAID is the opposite. They will fund organizations that already have a proven track record doing that work, whether you're the prime recipient or even a subcontractor. So what we talk with clients first is, what is it that you have that technical and geographic past performance doing? So early grade literacy in East Africa, great. Let's look at Kenya, Tanzania, Ethiopia, and Uganda education opportunities. And then from there, now we know there's funding for that, so those types of activities. Now we want to find the specific procurements through which that funding can flow. And those can be grants, contracts, purchase orders, subcontracts. So a variety of different mechanisms that you can access those thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions, billions of dollars from USAID. And then the third step is partners. Realistically, for almost anyone new to the USAID market, you're going to start as a sub-partner, a sub-grantee, or a subcontractor. For those not familiar with how federal contracting works, think Boeing is going to bid on an aerospace contract with the government. That would be your prime contractor in DC, like a place like Chemonix where I worked. They then need subcontractors to build the engines for aid. It's to lead the monitoring and evaluation or to run a certain program underneath the large procurement that they're bidding on. So that's often where a lot of new organizations, even large corporations, when they're getting into the USAID market, will often start as subcontractors or subgrantees.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I know my organization has had a lot of conversations about USAID funding. We have had USAID funding in the past, but there's definitely, it's not always the right fit for the type of work we're doing or the type of collaborations we're in the middle of. So maybe you know, what are some considerations that you think organizations should start with, think about before they even kind of make that step of going for funding?
Yeah. And I hear that a lot. So USAID is a lot of funding, but it is not a foundation and it is not a research donor. It is an implementing organization. So think of it as you are getting funding to implement USAID's ideas. This is not unrestricted funding that goes to an organization. And one thing, especially with organizations that are more focused on private funders, is I have them think through, this is a different fit. This is not, USAID is not like, oh, let's submit a grant to this other organization or this other foundation. USAID going into that market, I think is similar to entering a new country. Say you're doing work in Guatemala and Panama, and now you're going to go into Malawi. Okay, well, that's not something you're going to do overnight. That's a multi-month, multi-year process. You have milestones along the way. So with the USAID market, what you really want to look at is that low-intensity, multi-year strategy so that you can wait, you can get into the market, build the connections, and then wait for that specific opportunity that is a good fit for you. One difference I've seen is that, especially compared to more of the European aid markets, there is a bit more formal registration process and a bit more formal procurement process. With USAID, it's federal procurement. There's tons of regulations and compliance stuff for the process. But before those procurements come out, the informal networking is very important. And that's where that third P of the partners comes in. So it's finding those right partners, getting to know not just USAID, but these implementing partners, these primes, primarily in DC, who are going to be the ones bidding on the contracts and who you're going to want to get the, typically when you get started, the sub awards on the projects or on the contracts or grants.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So you've obviously been doing this for a while, both on the practitioner side and now with Aid Connect. So how has this landscape changed and what have you seen?
So my career started shortly after 2000. And so that was under the Bush 43 administration. And the big launch there was PEPFAR and the Global Health Initiative. And that's really stemmed a significant increase from we've had now from Bush, four different administrations I've worked in the USAID market under, and very different administrations, but the dollar amount has continued to go up. What I see from administration to administration is changes in policies, changes in priorities. If whether they're going to emphasize climate change or going to restrict certain global health organizations from accessing funding, that's the change you can see. And really, it's fairly predictable to expect now from administration to administration. The other consistency, I'd say, is localization in rhetoric. There has been from USAID forward under the Obama administration, through now the new partnerships initiative, there's been a recognition and an emphasis, and I would say a genuine openness to working with new partners, to working with local partners. And there's just been a variety of challenges along the way, both political and real challenges in implementation that have restricted that. With the new partnerships initiative now, this is one of the first initiatives that I've seen that actually has bridged administrations. Again, two very different administrations, where the previous administration started the new partnerships initiative, and without even rebranding it, the current one has actually accelerated that. So I think things like that are indicators with all the changes in the market that I look for. What are the things with staying power? If two different administrations continue a single initiative, that's usually a good indication that there's that type of initiative will be around for a while. And what that means for your members, for organizations new to USAID, is that there really is an openness to working with new partners, but there isn't the budget or the time for all these contractors and grantee and NGOs in DC to go hustle around and find them. So that burden is still on the organization to have that strategy, to engage either virtually or through a trip to meeting these organizations in person with these prime organizations. The good news is once they get to that point, if they've identified their past performance for the funding, found specific procurements, and then gone to the partners. And with those procurements, you go to the partners not saying, here's the great work I'm doing, can you help me out with some money? You go to them and say, hey, I know you're bidding on this $100 million Kenya education project. Here's the work we're doing in Kenya. This is why we can help you win this grant or this contract.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way to shift some of that perspective in my mind, because I definitely follow this quite a bit. It's very much the work of Green Empowerment is to support local in-country organizations. There was actually just recent research that came out that I saw that only 3.1% of global humanitarian funding went directly to local and national groups. And that's a number that hasn't changed since 2016. So it's, I guess it's encouraging or validating maybe to even hear you say like localization in rhetoric, but it's like, how do you actually make some of that happen? But the fact that you have some strategies maybe to help those groups, I think is maybe what's unique or different, right? Get
there
into
exactly
those partnerships. Yeah.
The funding won't show up at your door, but you getting to DC, it's not a closed door anymore, if it was, that there is that openness. The other interesting thing on localization, and I've heard Samantha Power, the USAID administrator, speak a few times on this. One of the times it was more not kind of like a definitive statement, but her pondering is, what is localization? Are we becoming too fixated on the legal entity that's getting the money? Or are we focused on, what if it is an international Washington, D.C. for-profit consulting firm that hires 100% Moldovans on a Moldova project? They implement it. They design it. They run it. Well, the profit partially went to a D.C. organization, but it was entirely local Moldovan staff that ran it. Is that localization? And she didn't share an answer, but more, I thought that was an interesting thing, because I think sometimes we can get hung up a lot, and for good reason too, because that is where the money and the profit goes, is who gets that contract. But yeah, it's been interesting to watch and continue to monitor how that conversation evolves. But it definitely doesn't go away. It just continues to evolve.
Yeah, that's really cool perspective. So maybe you could share a few maybe classic or common mistakes that you see made as we're talking about this process, and maybe putting yourself out there. Maybe there is an open door, you know, in this process. What are some of the mistakes that you would tell us all to avoid?
Yeah. So the most important thing is to keep the conversations relevant. So a common mistake is one is saying we could do something. No, talk about what you have done, not what you can do, and have your experience. So don't, when an organization asks, great, tell me more about your organization's experience. If you do domestic work or work in Europe or North America, it's not as relevant. So if you're sharing examples of your international work in Canada, that's great, but that's not going to resonate with the USAID partners. They want to hear about the work in Latin America, or Eurasia, or the Middle East, or Africa, or Asia, where the USAID projects are being implemented. So make sure your examples are relevant. And the other thing with the USAID market is that it's with the individual donors, you're going to want to go with more of that emotional tug, personal story. Here's how one person's life was improved or changed based on this funding. That's wonderful. And that's the approach for that type of funding. For the USAID market, or generally the bilateral and multilateral funding market, you want to go with, here's how tens of thousands of people have had their lives improved. Here is our methodology for measuring that improvement. So really going in with the big numbers for that. But at the end of the day, I would say, if you find the procurement that you have past performance for, and then see who's bidding on it, and then you go to them and you tell them why adding you to that proposal will help them win, that's a pretty compelling statement and a good way to get the attention of those teams in DC.
Have you had any kind of organizations that you've supported have those P's all lined up, go for it, get the contract, but not actually be maybe organizationally prepared to manage USAID funding? Because I know at Green Empowerment, right before I started, we had a large USAID grant, large for us, right? And it was really challenging on just the operational side of it because it was new, and some of the policies that I know you've already referred to and things. Like, have you seen that kind of play out? Or are there
I've kind of that readiness? Absolutely heard of that. Yeah. our team will put, I mean, every presentation I do is why you don't want USAID funding. and we really, I have talked potential clients out of working with us or even bidding and said, you are late. One time I got a proposal, this was years ago, that had been live for 15 days. In the USAID world, that's eternity. You need to know months before it goes live, not 2 weeks after. And he's like, we've written a proposal in a couple days before. And yes, maybe for some foundations you can do it, not for USAID. So I'd say we really just focus on, we want to help organizations have long-term success with USAID. That needs to happen. In order to do that, we need to have the best way to get started. In a situation like that, what I usually recommend to a client then is going to be, let's put this proposal on hold. Let's focus on what's coming out 3 to 9 months down the pipeline. And the other thing is, writing proposals for USA can be a very expensive process. It's not copying and pasting. There's exceptions for those that really know USAID, like DIV or some of the new concept notes. That's great that USA is making those types of procurements more accessible. But you really want to understand it is hundreds of thousands of dollars sometimes that organizations are spending writing each individual proposal. That's another reason that sub-partnering role, where it's a conversation and some back and forth emails with sending some CVs and past performance statements back and forth, rather than writing a full proposal. So that's another thing that we usually discourage organizations from doing, is trying to write prime proposals before they've gotten into the market.
That's really, really great advice. So you've mentioned kind of accessibility, making things accessible. Is that something that you're seeing, or how has that changed maybe? Or
yeah, so there's, I would say the main change, and this started on the previous administration, has been this now strong, and I would say in my experience, conversations with USAID staff and with partners, a very genuine openness to working with new partners, including this actual new partnerships initiative, which says we are trying to get more new partners in. And that goes beyond localization. We're just local partners. That extends to private sector, to faith-based groups, to organizations in Europe, what USAID would call third country entities. That's a thing that I know we've talked about this a few times, but I think that is an important thing to focus on, is understanding that there is this openness, but again, it's still federal funding. It's not a family foundation where the boss can just change her mind and say, oh, now I like this type of organization, you can get funding. It's federal procurement. At the heart of it is, with the Boeing example, it's the same process that a defense contractor, aerospace, or anyone else goes through for procurement. It's just, we're bidding on these for aid funding.
Yeah, it makes me think of that comment that you made where, you know, USAID has the kind of programs and projects they want to do. You're not necessarily pitching them, right, of ideas, and that's a key difference. So how much of that do you find that some of the organizations you work with, do they sometimes struggle because they are implementing foreign policy in a sense? Or how do you support organizations thinking through that part of it?
Yeah, there's two things there that we go through. One is, first, this is a different pitch, especially if you've been doing family foundations or individual donors. It is a very different pitch. And one thing to even think about is your website. You're going to have a website targeted to one or the other, and thinking about what is your funding priority, and what type of which funding track do you want to focus that on. The other piece of it is, it's federal funding, it's U.S. government funding. So you are supporting U.S. government foreign policy. For some organizations, that's something they do want to think through before they go through the process. What I see is my team's role is really just to monitor the funding, to monitor the market, to provide the market updates and the market research on, here's where the funding is, here are the opportunities. If you want to engage, here's how to go about it. But it hasn't been that common, but there have been a couple conversations I've had with potential clients where they have a very strong advocacy wing. And for them to think through things they're advocating for, if they're in maybe not against, but maybe don't align with U.S. government foreign policy at the time, that is something they're going to want to think through before they think about, is this the right market, being USAID funding, for them to go after?
Yeah, actually, Green Empowerment had an example of that with one of our partners in the Philippines who was really bought into the program, the project that we had designed. It aligned with our longtime partnership, But ultimately, by the time the project came through, you know, the U.S. government was also funding some counterterrorism activities in one of the regions. And that ended up being really challenging for them because they are a social justice organization. They're doing community development in their home country. And they still worked with us on the project, but they kind of, we structured it differently so that they were not any more official partner of the project to kind of try to honor both. But it was a challenging thing for us. I think once you get into some of these communities who might be not see the difference between USAID funding and other types of government, U.S. government involvement, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And with those local organizations, or I mean, honestly, we're talking billions of dollars with any organization, pretty much. It's just a lot of money. And, you know, you don't want to compromise your values by chasing it, but also to be successful with USAID, you do have to understand USAID's priorities. And really the pitch is here, USAID, or even if you're pitching to a prime contractor, a prime NGO, you're still telling them how, when they present you to USAID, why you are the right organization to help further and implement successfully USAID's priorities. So that's definitely something to think through. And one other thing to understand with the funding is when we hear billions, even hundreds of millions for some groups, even tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars, again, it's not unrestricted funding. So some private sector organizations that we've talked with, that's something what we'll explain them up front, is this is not a $20 million purchase order to buy a bunch of your medical supplies. This is $20 million going to a consultancy that's going to implement a project. Yes, there's going to be some procurements underneath that. So there's a big dollar amount, but it's important to understand that that is, I'd say, very, not restrictive, but prescriptive funding. Mm-hmm. And that there's very strict reporting requirements on that too. So again, things to think about with the market.
So maybe to talk about some of the positive things, maybe you could share some success stories that you've had that you think might be kind of inspirational for our listeners today.
Yeah, absolutely. So one that we're very proud of is we worked with a group called Popoyan in Guatemala. They are a local organization and we helped them win their first prime RFP. Now I say that and then I want to give the full context. They had been successfully implementing sub-agreements and other partnerships with USAID well before they worked with us for years and understood that. And then they were at that point where they were then ready to bid on that prime proposal. And that's where we came in and really just helped them understand how to switch from that subbing role to that priming role. They've won that, got significant funding, and have continued to build on that. There's another group, U.S. Small Business. They had been doing great work outside the USAID space, have been trying to break in. We helped them with getting some of those introductions to some of the big prime organizations in D.C. That group is now a prime contractor themselves. And it's been, I would say for them, it was probably maybe a 2-3 year process of going from outside the market with a couple connections to getting those sub awards and then to becoming a prime group. So I think the takeaway from that is, you know, you see this money, great, get excited about it, understand it, but understand too that it is, it again, as I say, that low intensity, long-term process where how can someone on your team spend a couple hours, I would say a few hours a month, engage with this process? And that's where we built our software for, is to cue organizations about when their Nepal education or their economic growth Peru activity is, that partnering window is open, because you could go a month or two and there's really not a whole lot you need to do in terms of partnering. And then something changes on one of the procurement channels. And then you want to move within a couple days at that point. So that's really what we've focused on doing, is trying to make USAID partnering as efficient as possible so that the time spent on that is really productive and that organizations know when they don't need to focus on the market and they can look at all the other challenges and implementation issues and funding requirements that come with being a small organization that has a lot of different funding channels.
Yeah, that's really great perspective. It's funny because Green Empowerment is going through our strategic plan. I think you're giving me some good questions to talk about with my board, actually.
Excellent.
Unintended benefit of getting to host a podcast. So you had all this experience and this background. I've been doing this work. I think my next question is kind of like, what do you wish was different? Like if you could change something or if you could see something change in the future, what do you think that could be?
I wish that accessing funding would be less costly. I wish that organizations, that more of the funding would go to hiring staff, hiring Moldovan staff on the ground for our project there, to hiring more local entities, to just doing better and measuring the development impact that we're doing on the ground, not as much who knows how to best refresh these obscure government procurement websites and can get the timely information. So what we really want is that the organizations getting funding from USAID are the best to deliver impact. What we see is our role for USAID is that we are opening up the amount of organizations that can put a proposal into USAID, can share their expertise with USAID so that USAID has more options to choose from. And then we're helping them put their pitch together in a way that makes it easier for USAID to understand how they could potentially fit in. So what we want to see is that more organizations are getting funding from USAID and that that we're breaking down the two main barriers to entry we see for the USAID market is one, understanding the complex federal procurement process, and two, having established relationships in the market with USAID, but almost more importantly, with the USAID implementing partners, the NGOs and the contractors.
That's super useful. All right. Well, this has been super, I think, informative. I hope our listeners like it. And for those of you that are in the Portland metro area, Mike will actually be with us in person at Google PDX Development Drink. So that's on September 29th. You can ask Mike any burning questions you have over a beer or any type of beverage of your choice. So highly recommend that. He'll be sharing a little bit more about kind of some of the information that he shares at seminars, and then we'll be there to network and connect with a lot of our audience. So I really appreciate you showing up for that. And it's also a fun way to connect with other people.
Andrea, thank you so much. And thank you and the whole team at Global PDX for the work you're doing. It's so important to have these development and international aid hubs dispersed around the world just so we can keep having a diverse variety of ideas coming into the development space. So thank you to you and your team for the work that you all doing. And I'm looking forward to staying in touch with you all.
Well, that's awesome. And that's a great plug, actually, for our upcoming conference on October 24th. First in Portland. So for those of you in Portland area or in Oregon, please check that out on our website. Global PDX is dedicated to keeping you connected and engaged. For resources from this podcast and more, check out our website. If you aren't already a member, please consider joining our global community and feel free to email communications@globalpdx.org with any questions. Thank you.